I want to see science serve a useful purpose to improve the standard of living for all people.
Hey, why is anyone fighting food advance? A very small percentage of the world's population is fortunate enough to have the luxury of turning down food.
We've arranged a society based on science and technology in which nobody understands anything about science and technology.
You can't build a peaceful world on empty stomachs and human misery.
You're listening to Talking Biotech, a weekly podcast illuminating issues in agricultural and medical biotechnology. Your questions and concerns are addressed using a science-based approach with the goal of driving discovery to application with communication. Now here's your host, Dr. Kevin Folta.
Welcome to the Talking Biotech podcast. It's the weekly podcast where we discuss contemporary issues in science and technology with a focus on biotechnology and the new innovations that can help people and help our planet. I'm Kevin Folta, and today we'll be talking about groundnut, or maybe you think of it as peanut, and the disease-causing organisms that lead to a contaminant called aflatoxin, one of the most potent toxins out there. We recently had the opportunity to read about a breakthrough in this area by which the toxin levels could be mitigated using a couple different biotechnological techniques. Today, I'm speaking with one of the investigators on that project. We go to St. Louis, Missouri, to the Donald Danforth Plant Science Center to talk to Dilip Shah. Dr. Shah is a principal investigator on the project and is a research associate at the Danforth Center. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Shah.
Thank you.
So let's start out with a little bit of background about this particular issue. What is aflatoxin?
So aflatoxins are toxic compounds that are produced by certain fungi, which infect peanuts and corn and some other commodity crops. And then these compounds are highly carcinogenic. They also suppress immune system, and they are known to cause liver cancer in people who consume this aflatoxin contaminated peanuts or corn.
Yeah, that's we had Dr. Monica Schmidt on the podcast back in episode 74. And we talked about the issues in corn, but in peanut, it's a really interesting situation because is it really worse in peanut for some reason?
Yes, because peanuts, usually the pea pod and the peanut pods develop underground. And that's where the fungus, is located. And under certain conditions that are favorable to the fungus, these peanut pods get infected with this fungus. And if not controlled, this fungus can produce toxins.
And this is a kind of, when you talk about peanuts, when all of the news came out about this, it talked about groundnut. And are peanuts and groundnuts essentially synonymous, or are these different types of varieties or even different species that maybe are used in different parts of the world?
They are synonymous. So, there are different varieties of, peanuts grown in different regions of the world. But basically, peanuts and groundnuts are the same.
Yeah, that was something that, as much time as I've spent in science, wasn't sure if they were exactly the same. And it's good to know that they are the same because I certainly understand what a peanut is. I think there was like some family folklore that says that someone in my family invented the salted in the shell peanut, which is rather interesting, but I don't know if that's true or not. But let's talk about the idea of peanuts in the industrialized world versus the developing world. What's the big difference in terms of aflatoxin exposure and in terms of aflatoxin problems in both the industrialized world versus the developing world?
Yeah, so you know, in countries like in the U.S. and Canada, the overall contamination of peanuts with aflatoxins is generally low because of the cultural practices that peanut growers use here in this in the developed countries. Whereas in underdeveloped countries where peanuts are grown, this aflatoxin problem is much bigger. And that's because the peanut growers don't have aflatoxin-resistant varieties available to them. And the peanut growers cannot spend enough money to control fungal infection.
And what are some of the major countries that are peanut consumers? Are there specific examples of places, especially in the developing world, where peanut is a very important part of the diet?
Yes. So, peanuts are actually eaten in many different countries of the world. So peanuts are consumed raw. They are also used in peanut butter. Okay. So there are a number of uses of peanuts.
A few weeks ago, I was in Uganda, and I had the opportunity to talk to people there, farmers in Uganda, and they were particularly interested in aflatoxin as it pertained to maize. They said that people there had a higher likelihood of dying of liver cancer than of malaria, and that this idea of aflatoxin being a problem is really extreme. Do you have any ideas about how many people really suffer from this problem, or any estimates of how many people have chronic exposure?
So it is estimated that 5 billion people worldwide are exposed to aflatoxins. And most of these people are from these underdeveloped or developing countries.
Wow, so that you said 5 billion. So that's almost...
Yes, that's 5 billion people. And particularly in Africa, in Western Africa, they had conducted a survey of people for aflatoxin contamination. And they found that 95% of the individuals had detectable levels of aflatoxins in their blood.
It really is amazing that this kind of problem can be happening at such a massive level, yet is really under the radar as far as most Western people are concerned. Like, you don't hear people discussing this. It is a good opportunity for technology to maybe come in and play a vital role in solving
problems. Yes.
Yeah, I think this is one place to really solve a problem. So let's take a quick break here, and then when we come back on the other side of the break, we'll visit with Dr. Shaw about what is the solution that his group implemented to solve the problem of aflatoxin in peanuts. We'll be right back in just a moment.
If you've been reading on the internet lately, you know that the question has been raised about how the Talking Biotech podcast is funded. I can see why. I mean, this would come up again and again. It's a high-quality, professionally produced podcast like this. It must depend on deep pockets from some major agricultural concern.
I'm not sure they're getting your sarcasm on that.
Well, I certainly can vouch for the fact that this is a volunteer effort. As the booth announcer for the Talking Biotech podcast, I get a lousy cup of coffee and my pick of the donuts from the box that Kevin doesn't want. That's it. But that's okay. This enterprise is not about making a buck. It's about sharing science. The podcast is 100% funded by Fulda personally, and no outside funding is considered. Go ahead. Try us. Send us a check for $1 million and see if you don't get it right back. The real payment for the effort is the flood of kind words, the growing numbers of downloads, and the great questions that we get from listeners like you. Thank you for listening, and now back to the podcast.
And we're back on the Talking Biotech podcast today, talking about what is a major world health crisis, the problem of aflatoxins, particularly in this case, in peanuts. We've been discussing this topic with Dr. Dilip Shah from the Donald Danforth Institute in St. Louis, Missouri. All right, so we heard all about aflatoxins and how this is a major agent in chronic exposure with people all over the world, particularly in the developing world. So what was the solution that the research that you were involved with, what was that research or what was the method used to solve the problem?
So the method that we are trying to develop is to generate transgenic peanut lines that will be resistant to fungal infection, or they can reduce the synthesis of these toxic compounds. So we use basically two strategies to generate aflatoxin resistant peanuts.
And I guess the first strategy was to use a kind of protein called a defensin, and that you installed these genes in into peanut. So where did you get the defensin genes? Where do they come from?
So this defensin genes come from this model legume plant called Medicago truncatula. So one of the genes actually came from Medicago truncatula. The other came from alfalfa, which is a very important forage crop. So these two genes were introduced into peanuts, and we found that the proteins produced by these two genes were able to stop fungal infection.
And defensins, we've heard about in different capacities here. We talked about defensins way back maybe 2 years ago on the podcast with regards to citrus, because this was one of the types one of the types of genes that could have a role in fighting that bacterium.
Citrus greening, absolutely.
So, but how do defensins work? Do you have a good understanding of the mechanism of action?
Yeah, so for the last few years, we have been looking at the mechanisms of action of these proteins. It turns out these proteins are able to damage the fungal cell wall and also the fungal plasma membrane. Some of these defensins can actually get into fungal cells and inhibit some of the important fungal cell processes. So these are the general mechanisms by which these peptides can stop fungus from growing.
But doesn't peanut have its own defensins? It seems like peanut, but why don't they work?
So peanuts have their own defensins. Quite often these defensins are not expressed in the right place at the right time. So if you have, let's say a defensin which is active against Aspergillus flavus, and it is expressed in all tissues, then when the fungus comes in, it will be able to see this defensin and respond to it, while the endogenous defensins quite often are not able to make contact with the fungus.
Yeah, I see. So that is kind of a common problem we see across plant defense, is that the evolved mechanisms are great in the wild, but maybe aren't turned on or turned on at the right time or in the right tissue. So, okay, that's good.
Often, fungus will also shut down the expression of the endogenous defensins.
That's true. And I guess maybe by using the defensins from other legumes, I mean, you're putting in something that's a little bit different that, that I don't know, does alfalfa have a problem with aflatoxin or with aspergillus?
It has not been documented.
Ah, okay. So that's kind of interesting then. So
yeah, that's actually interesting.
So aside from this defensin protein that you have engineered in that makes a peptide that can target fungal cell walls, membranes, and other processes, you also added this small RNA, and through this idea of the host-initiated immunity, how does that work?
Yeah, so the idea here is to use double-stranded RNA that is directed against the genes that are directly responsible for aflatoxin biosynthesis. So when you express this double-stranded RNA in peanuts, what happens is that this double-stranded RNA gets into the fungal cells and will silence the genes for aflatoxin production. So it's called host-induced gene silencing. And this approach has also been shown to work in case of number of fungal pathogens. And now, you know, we have been able to show that it also works in case of peanuts to shut down aflatoxin biosynthesis.
Yeah, let me just run through this one more time, because the audience sometimes they should know this one, because this is really cool. This is where the researchers install a coding sequence that matches the opposite of the genes needed for the synthesis of aflatoxin. And what this does is it causes an RNA-mediated interference. So but there's a step before that. The plant is making these small RNAs that don't match the plant sequence. They have nothing to do with the plant sequence, so they're basically benign to the plant cell.
Yeah.
But when the fungus invades, it takes up a little bit of that RNA, and in the process, it goes through this cycle of amplification of those small pieces, which then shut down the genes required for aflatoxin production. Pretty cool. And this is what this Higgs approach does. It was
host-induced gene silencing.
Host-induced gene silencing. There's too many words like... Higgs. Like, there's too many words that start with I, and I never get it right. I always... So this solution is really cool because it has really two prongs to it. Was that done on purpose to more or less ensure a less likelihood or a lower likelihood of the pathogen around it?
Yeah, so the goal is to actually, you know, stop this fungus pre-harvest as well as, you know, post-harvest. And, you know, we like to combine these two technologies in a single transgenic, you know, peanut plant to make sure that the peanuts that are produced are completely free from any toxin contamination.
Well, and this is always the point of the podcast where it's actually a little bit sad, because I always wonder, here we have an excellent solution that can help the health of billions of people. How is it moving towards deregulation? Is it something that's in the works in the States or something in other parts of the world that's even in a pipeline towards deregulation?
So right now it's in very early stage of commercial development. So we have the proof of concept, in the greenhouse studies. Now, you know, we need to test these lines in the field to convince ourselves that these technologies work in the field. And then we will try to seek regulatory approval for this technology.
And is there a plan to move these kinds of genes or these types of transgenic solutions? Can these be coupled with the natural immunities that are found in peanut? Like, do you have specific lines you'd like to cross?
That's correct. So once you have transgenic peanut lines that are immune from Aspergillus infection, they can be crossed with commercially grown peanut lines, in different parts of the world, and you can actually transfer these genes for aflatoxin control to the grower preferred varieties.
And so if people wanted to learn more about this particular project, is there a place that you could direct them online or maybe to a social media site where they could learn more about it?
So the website is icrisat.org.
Okay, so I-C-R-I-S-A-T?
Yeah.
.org. And I'll place a link for it on the website accompanying this particular episode.
Yeah.
So what's next in the future of the project, other than breeding into those new varieties?
So the next is to combine these two traits, these two technologies, in a single peanut plant, with the hope that we can completely stop aflatoxin production. And then we will test these lines in the field for at least 2 to 3 years. And then, once that's done, these lines will have to be tested at multiple locations, throughout India.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable in a lot of ways that the time to approval is something that relies on a lot of field tests and we know how peanuts grow and we know they're good varieties. So if you just make them one better, it would be a different story if it was a better flavor or a funny color. But the fact that this is a solution to liver cancer that's striking billions of people.
Absolutely.
It almost seems immoral to hold that technology back. And, it's one of the frustrations that I always feel in these interviews, and certainly I'm sure you as a researcher, you're doing this for the right reasons, and, it's slow to hit the ground. But, good luck to you and your team on this. And I'm really looking forward to this being a big thing going forward. And when you have additional breakthroughs, please contact me. I'd be very, very excited to have you back on the podcast.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you very much, Dr. Dilip Shath. Thank you very much for participating in today's podcast with your exciting studies. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that was Dr. Dilip Shah from the Donald Danforth Institute in St. Louis, Missouri, with breakthroughs in groundnut or peanut to stop aflatoxin, the carcinogen that comes from a common pathogen of peanuts and maize that has profound impacts on humans. This is the Talking Biotech Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Please write a review on iTunes. It really does help us out. We're actually doing pretty good over there. Lots of podcasts out in science space right now, and we have a really distinct niche. We're not covering a wide variety of topics. We're talking about issues in biotechnology, particularly with genetic engineering. We have good penetration in that space. But in order for us to gain a larger audience to learn about these technologies, in this case, something that could help billions of people, we need those reviews. We need your feedback. So spread the word, talk to other people, share the good things that we hear from the outstanding folks who join us here on the Talking Biotech Podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Biotech Podcast. Please send your suggestions for guests, comments, or questions to talkingbiotech@gmail.com. Please write a review on iTunes and recommend this podcast to a friend. More downloads and reviews raise the visibility of this podcast and help us reach a wider audience with science.